Let's get the auction underway. On the first cow here, who's got 55? Sold your way. 79, JBS, number one.
JJ.
7-08, 9-09, 9-09, 59, 60, 60, 60, 65, now quarter, quarter, half and a half, 75, 75, 75, now 75, 75, now 75, 75, 75, sold your way.
Ponudba in preupraševanje. Vsak drugi ponedeljek v mesecu ob 8 zvečer preuprašujemo ekonomske teme in ponujamo odgovore.
I want to talk for a few minutes with the people of the United States about banking.
No, no, no.
Francoski stokholmski sindrom. Okostenev trg dela, trdovratna brezposelnost, radikalni sindikati in skrajna levica. Tovrstne označbe so prevladovale v medijskem poročanju o reformi trga dela v Franciji in njenih nasprotnikih. Reforma, ki jo je prejšnji mesec s predsedniškim ukazom sprejel predsednik Emmanuel Macron, prinaša lažje odpuščanje delavcev in znižanje odpravnin ter zamejuje moč sindikatov v manjših podjetjih. Tokratni termin oddaje ponudba in preupraševanje, v kateri se vsak drugi ponedeljek v mesecu posvečamo gospodarskim temam, namenjamo tej reformi. K tematiki ne bomo pristopili z vidika neposrednega vpliva na francoskega delavca, prav tako ne bomo analizirali primerjalno visoke, a pešajoče moči francoskih sindikatov. Na reformo bomo pogledali z makroekonomskega vidika. Iz kakšne logike izhaja, ki tiči dejanski razlog domnevne potrebe za njo in kakšni bodo njeni učinki? Odgovore na ta vprašanja nam je osvetlil Heiner Flasbeck.
It will not end up by reducing unemployment, but by increasing unemployment.
Heiner Flasbeck je nemški ekonomist in profesor na Univerzi v Hamburgu. Je nekdani vodja oddelka za makroekonomske analize pri konferenci Združenih narodov za trgovino in razvoj, krajše UNCTAD, edine globalne meddržavne institucije, ki se ukvarja z makroekonomskimi analizami in v kateri imajo prevladujoč delež glasovalnih pravic države v razvoju. Skupaj z grškim ekonomistom Kostasom Lapavicasom je avtor knjige Against the Troika, ki razlog za dolžniško krizo v evroobmočju suvereno postavi na pleča Nemčije.
The question whether Germany has a role to play in the euro crisis that is just dead in Germany, and the main media also not talking about it. And so it's Germany is in a state of denial concerning its own role.
Sprejem reforme trga dela v Franciji ima, čeprav je to nekoliko manj izrazito, iste vzroke kot grška kriza. Ista kot pri pogojih za posojila Grčiji pa je tudi logika reforme. Država mora znižati stroške delovne sile, da bo dosegla konkurenčnost, povečala zaposlenost in se izvlekla iz krize. Tovrstna argumentacija izhaja iz mikroekonomskih principov. Če podjetju uspe znižati stroške dela, bo bodisi bolj konkurenčno in bo povečalo svoj tržni delež, bodisi bo proizvedlo višji dobiček, s katerim bo financiralo investicije v dolgoročno širitev. Kar pa ne pomeni, da isti principi veljajo v makroekonomiji.
Because wages have another role that is more important than just to be cost, namely wages are determining demand in an economy. And that means domestic demand in particular is determined by wages. And if you cut wages, then you cut domestic demand implicitly.
Nižanje prihodkov državljanov rezultira v nižanju povpraševanja po proizvodih in storitvah, kar privede do znižane proizvodnje, ta pa k nadaljnemu nižanju plač oziroma odpuščen in gospodarstvo se znajde v začaranem krogu, kot se je to zgodilo v Grčiji. Sama fleksibilizacija trga dela, ki jo uvaja reforma v Franciji, iz makroekonomskega vidika ne bi bila problematična, če le ne bi vodila k nižanju prihodkov.
Yeah, but how can you avoid it? It's very difficult to avoid.
Poleg tega, da se je nižanju prihodkov fleksibilizaciji težko izogniti, je prav to tudi cilj sproščanja omejitev na trgu dela, zato...
If you flexibilize the labor market in the way that Germany has done at the beginning of the century, or other countries, Greece has done most recently, they have cut their wages by 30%. Well, you do not end up in reducing unemployment, but you end up increasing unemployment. And the only exception is Germany indeed. It worked just in Germany under very special conditions.
Mm-hmm. Dejstvo, da je omejevanje rasti plač delovalo v Nemčiji, je pogosto navedeno kot razlog, zakaj bi nemškemu zgledu morale slediti še ostale države. A kot poudarja Flasbeck, je v Nemčiji ta strategija delovala zaradi posebnih okoliščin, osnova katerih je prav dejstvo, da po enakih metodah niso posegle ostale evropske države. Jedro nemške strategije je dogovor med vlado, sindikati in delodajalci z konca 90-ih let prejšnjega stoletja. Dogovor, sklenjen z namenom zmanjšanja takrat precej visoke stopnje brezposelnosti v Nemčiji, je predvidel odcepitev rasti plač od rasti produktivnosti. Rast produktivnosti se od takrat torej ne preliva avtomatsko v sorazmerno višanje plač, temveč, kot so to obesedili takratni pogajalci, je del rasti produktivnosti rezerviran za znižanje brezposelnosti. Zakaj je povezava med plačami in produktivnostjo ključna, pojasni Flasbeck.
Very simple. The only way you can pay wages is to have productivity.
Produktivnost ali po slovensko storilnost pomeni, koliko dodane vrednosti proizvede posamezni delavec v nekem časovnem obdobju. Produktivnost celotnega gospodarstva je tako enaka bruto domačemu proizvodu gospodarstva na enoto vloženega dela.
If you have high productivity, you can pay high wages. If you have low productivity, you can only pay low wages. That's a very simple iron rule for all countries in the world. Why do developing countries have so low wages? Well, because their capital stock is low, because their productivity is low. That's why they cannot pay high wages. So wages and productivity are always very closely related. And when you have productivity increases, your wages have to increase, because otherwise people cannot buy the products that you're producing. Higher productivity means that you're able to produce more with the same people. So, but the people should get higher wages so that you can demand more, because otherwise you cannot sell the products that you have produced with a higher productivity, then the higher productivity was useless. So, if a country with high productivity, like Germany, puts political pressure on its wages, then something goes wrong in this world. And if you do not have an exchange rate, as we said, then it cannot work.
Če ni menjalnega tečaja, to ne more delovati. Nemčija je s tripartitnim dogovorom med vlado, sindikati in delodajalci ustvarila politični pritisk na plače in njihovo rast oddvojila od rasti produktivnosti. Ključno pri tem pa je, da med državami evroobmočja ni mogoče spreminjati menjalnega tečaja. Zaradi te omejitve obstaja eno ključno pravilo, ki se ga morajo države tovrstne monetarne unije držati.
Well, the point is very simple. As I said, at the beginning of the Eurozone in 1999, there was an agreement that everybody should go for an inflation rate, and inflation target was fixed of 2%. And inflation is very much determined in all our economies by unit labor costs, by the relation of nominal wages to productivity in any economy.
Unit labor costs, oziroma strošek dela na enoto proizvoda, popisuje prihodek delavcev, ki je hkrati tudi kupna moč, na enoto proizvoda, ki je hkrati tudi blago. Ker predstavlja razmerje med kupno močjo in količino blaga, je rast stroška dela na enoto proizvoda ključen dejavnik pri določanju rasti cen, to je inflacije.
And so if this is the case, and it is the case, empirical, you can show that, then it's absolutely clear if you have an inflation target of 2% that all countries should follow a wage policy, well, roughly at least, where nominal wages rise 2% more than the national productivity.
Francija se je tega pravila držala precej natančno, česar pa ni mogoče trditi za Nemčijo.
And the one country that grossly violated this rule was Germany, no doubt about it. France was exactly on the right path. France had the increase of nominal wages and unit labor costs in line with the inflation target, and Germany violated that by undercutting the inflation target.
Rast produktivnosti, ki je osnova za rast plač, je v Franciji in Nemčiji od leta 1999 domala identična. V Franciji so v tem času nominalne plače rasle za skoraj natanko 2 odstotni točki hitreje kot produktivnost. Rast plač v Franciji je bila torej skladna z dogovorjenim ciljem 2-odstotne inflacije. V Nemčiji pa so zaradi političnega pritiska plače rasle precej počasneje, kar se je odražalo tudi v precej nižji inflaciji. Nižja inflacija v Nemčiji je rezultirala v realno podcenjeni valuti. Nižja stopnja inflacije tako v Nemčiji kot v Franciji pomeni, da cene dobrin in storitev v Nemčiji rastejo počasneje kot v Franciji. Ta razlika se kumulira in čez nekaj časa je v Nemčiji mogoče za 1 euro dobiti več kot v Franciji. Če bi državi imeli vsaka svojo valuto, bi se razlika odražala tudi v menjalnem tečaju. Evroobmočje pa si lahko predstavljamo kot vrsto ločenih nacionalnih valut s fiksnim menjalnim tečajem. Ne glede na razlike v inflaciji ali drugih gospodarskih kazalnikih, bo en francoski evro vedno vreden natanko toliko kot en nemški evro. Nominalni menjalni tečaj se ohranja, zaradi razlik v inflaciji pa se spreminja realni menjalni tečaj. Nemčija ima tako realno podcenjeno valuto, kar veča konkurenčnost nemških izvoznikov.
Yeah, that is exactly the problem. If you have real changes in the real so-called real exchange rate, that means changes in competitiveness for the overall economy. That is as if you give the government gives all companies in an economy a subsidy and in this way the domestic companies benefit from the government subsidy at the expense of the foreign companies. And this is unfair and this is forbidden in Europe and it cannot be extended. So either you have a common market in Europe or you don't have it. And if you have fixed exchange rate or currency union, then it's absolutely crucial that you behave in a reasonable way. And this was violated, it was, as I said, by Germany, but it was also violated by the southern countries.
Sredozemske države, kot so Grčija, Španija in Italija, prav tako niso igrale po pravilih. Njihova rast plač, s tem pa inflacija, je bila višja od dogovorjene, kar je privedlo do precenjene valute in s tem nekonkurenčnosti njihovih izvoznih podjetij. A kljub vsemu je nemški pritisk na plače inflacijo potisnil dlje od dogovorjenega cilja, kar je v kombinaciji z velikostjo nemškega gospodarstva na kolena spravilo tudi Francijo, ki se je do potankosti držala dogovorjenega.
This violation of the rule brought all the other countries into big trouble, the countries in the south even more, Italy, Spain, Greece and so on. But France also, although France really stuck to this target and was the only country more or less that went to apply the right wage development.
Težave, s katerimi se soočajo sredozemske države in Francija, se na eni strani kažejo v visoki brezposelnosti, na drugi v trgovinskih primankljajih. Sredozemske države in tudi Francija beležijo trgovinski primankljaj. Uvozijo torej več kot izvozijo, za razliko pa se morajo zadolževati, kar otežuje napore po uravnoteženju proračuna. Medtem pa Nemčija, opremljena s podcenjeno valuto, vsako leto podira rekorde s trgovinskimi presežki in si zlahka privošči tudi proračunski presežek. Nemški trgovinski presežek je lani dosegel več kot 8% bruto domačega proizvoda in je največji na svetu. A visoka stopnja brezposelnosti v perifernih državah in Franciji ter njihov trgovinski primankljaj sta le dve strani istega kovanca. Vlogo Nemčije pri obeh pojasni Flasbek.
Trade imbalances mean that you have as I said you are exporting your unemployment. Well, that's not a nice thing to export your unemployment. For you it may be nice, but for the neighbors it's a bad thing. They're importing unemployment because they're losing jobs. They're losing all the time jobs because Germany is much more competitive, the German companies are more competitive than their own companies and they're losing jobs, they're losing market shares in the international market, not only in Europe, but in China and all around the world.
V primeru Francije je izguba konkurenčnosti pripeljala do 10% brezposelnosti, kar poskuša vlada reševati po nemškem modelu z omejevanjem rasti plač.
And this is can hardly be corrected because now flexibilization of labor market in France would mean to cut wages again and they would have to cut by something like 20%.
20%. Znižanje plač za 20% bi privedlo do enakega upada domačega povpraševanja, kar je recept za krizo.
And this is, as I said, extremely painful because you cut your domestic demand and so it will not result in an overall good economic development in France. It will question the any government that will try to implement such policies and it will not end up by reducing unemployment but by increasing unemployment.
V Francoska reforma trga dela je odraz bolehanja za makroekonomsko verzijo stokholmskega sindroma. Francosko gospodarstvo, ki se je v krizi znašlo ravno zaradi nelojalne nemške konkurence, poskuša reševati ravno po nemškem modelu. A kot smo omenili na začetku oddaje, pritisk na plače privede do padca potrošnje in ponavadi rezultira v pešanju gospodarstva. Da je Nemčiji s to strategijo uspelo, je rezultat posebnih okoliščin.
Because in Germany there was another effect came to play more important out of over the time, over 10 years, and that was the effect through exports.
Pod pogojem, da druge države kupujejo nemške proizvode.
So what you can do by cutting wages if there is no flexible exchange rate.
Pod pogojem fiksnega menjalnega tečaja.
If you are in a currency union or in a system of absolutely fixed exchange rate, you can beggar your neighbor, so to say.
Izvoziš brezposelnost sosedu.
You can improve your competitiveness and the competitiveness of all your companies, and then you can gain something. But nevertheless, even Germany has lost a lot on the side of domestic demand, and only because the whole experiment went for 10 years, the overall effect for Germany was then positive. Germany increased its export share dramatically from 30% of GDP to 50% of GDP. And but this cannot be repeated by the other countries so easily.
Očitno je, da je nemški podvig za uspeh potreboval precej specifične okoliščine. Da bi upad domačega povpraševanja lahko nadomestil izvoz, so morale ostale države ohranjati raven domačega povpraševanja, s katerim so lahko kupovale nemške izvozne produkte. Če bi po nemški strategiji posegle vse države Evropske unije, na to namreč ciljajo priporočila Evropske komisije in tudi francoska reforma trga dela, ta najverjetneje ne bi delovala. Evropska unija namreč proizvede več kot petino svetovnega bruto domačega proizvoda in upada povpraševanja v tako velikem delu svetovnega gospodarstva ne bi bilo lahko nadomestiti z izvozom drugam. Poleg tega je vloga izvoza v celotnem evropskem gospodarstvu relativno majhna.
Yeah, for the euro as a whole, for Europe as a whole, or for the eurozone as a whole, indeed the export share is rather low. It's something around 15%, so 1/5, not 50, but 1/5%, and that means that you cannot move the whole economy of the eurozone by moving exports.
Pogoj, da upad povpraševanja nadomesti izvoz, bi bilo na ravni celotne Evropske unije torej težko doseči, prav tako pa v tem primeru ne velja pogoj fiksnega menjalnega tečaja.
And you have to face always that other countries are retaliating. The US will not allow Europe to improve its employment situation dramatically by going for an export surplus. And the developing countries also would try to prevent it, and they would prevent it. They have a simple instrument to prevent it, namely by devaluing their exchange rates, you see.
Nobena država svojo valuto namreč ne bi dopustila obsežnejšega trgovinskega primankljaja s tako velikim gospodarstvom, kot je Evropska unija, zato bi enostavno devalvirala valuto.
And in so far there is no way in which under normal conditions where you are not in a monetary union, but you are in a world of flexible exchange rates or adjustable exchange rates, that you can improve your employment situation at the cost of your neighbor. It's a silly idea.
Znotraj pravil evroobmočja ni očitne politike, s katero bi si lahko država, tudi tako velika kot Francija, sama povrnila konkurenčnost z Nemčijo in ohranila domače povpraševanje.
No, it's more or less impossible inside the eurozone to escape this trap in which they are. They would need much higher government deficits to stimulate demand inside the country, but higher deficits are forbidden in the Stability and Growth Pact, so they're trapped.
Prav tako kot primankljaji so v Evropi prepovedani tudi trgovinski presežki, saj presežek ene države pomeni primankljaj druge. Nemški trgovinski presežek presega dovoljeno mejo, a se je Evropska komisija po preučitvi problema odločila, da surprise, surprise, ne bo ukrepala.
And as I said, cutting wages will also not bring about the right results. So inside the monetary union, the only way to change things is to, as we discussed, stand up politically and to oppose the German approach.
Postaviti se nasproti Nemčiji, ki za vso silo brani svojo merkantilistično politiko, pa bi bil obsežen politični projekt, kar je tudi eden od razlogov, zakaj se Francija tej politiki ne upre.
Sure, that's difficult to say because, well, I could say they don't have able economists, maybe part of the reason.
Morda zveni narcisistično, a ekonomska stroka je resnično ujeta v empirično neutemeljeno vero v odrešilno nevidno roko trga.
The other reason may be that it's difficult. It's difficult for a politician like Macron and others and before Hollande to stand up and say, well, Germany, the biggest country in the Eurozone, is wrong. No? That they should have said for 10 years ago. But the longer this goes and the longer Germany, so to say, is successful, the more difficult it is to say for the others that Germany is wrong. And then you have the whole company sector, and the company sector, obviously, they think in micro terms, microeconomic terms, they have no clue. They say and they tell the government, so the lobbyists, all the lobbyists tell the government all the time, oh, it's due to the German productivity and the Germans are much harder working people and all this nonsense. And so the government is impressed by this.
Vlade v Evropi gospodarsko politiko snujejo ne na podlagi empiričnih analiz in razumskih utemeljitev, temveč na podlagi ideoloških predpostavk o učinkovitosti trga, znatno podkrepljenih stereotipiziranjem. Nemci so pač po naravi delavni, južnjaki leni, Francozi pa uživaški. Na mitologiji zasnovana politika, ki vsem predpisuje nižanje plač, pa ima zelo realne posledice.
That's why we have now deflationary tendency in Europe. It's not falling from heaven, it's a result of German deflationary policies from the very beginning.
Evroobmočje se z veliko napora in več tisoč milijardami na novo ustvarjenega denarja Evropske centralne banke bori proti deflaciji, ki otežuje postkrizni zagon gospodarstva. Deflacija pa ni nič drugega kot druga beseda za padec povpraševanja izhajajočega iz nižanja prihodkov. Najboljših makroekonomistov ta čas torej ne najdemo v pisarnah ekonomskih fakultet in inštitutov, na hodnikih evropskih institucij ali v gospodarskih redakcijah večine medijev. Najdemo jih v tako poimenovanih radikalnih vrstah na ulicah Francije. Oddajo je pripravil Cviter, bral je Cvetko, tehniciral Brada. Let's get the auction underway. Ah, the first cow here. Ah, who's got 55? Sold your way. 79. JBS number 1. JJ
7, 8, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9, 9 ob 8 zvečer. Preuprašujemo ekonomske teme in ponujamo odgovore.
I want to talk for a few minutes with the people of the United States about banking.
No.